Welcome to Earth Matters here on Gila Membris Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. The New Mexico Public Regulation Commission, the PRC, regulates the utilities, telecommunications, and motor carrier industries in the state to ensure fair and reasonable rates and to assure reasonable and adequate services to the public. Joining me today to talk more about the agency, what it does, and some of the issues under consideration right now is Sandy Jones, Commissioner for District 5, covering the southwest quadrant of New Mexico. Welcome, Sandy.
Well, thanks for giving me the chance to be on the show today. Thank you.
Thanks for squeezing us into your schedule. So, Sandy, let's start out. Many people don't know anything about the PRC. They've never even heard of the agency. So maybe you can give us an overview of what you all do and how your efforts impact the everyday lives of New Mexicans.
Well, that's a great question. And a lot of people don't know what the PRC does. And we try like heck to get that word out. But it's really a very important agency for consumers. We regulate the monopolies, the gas company, electric utilities, telephone. We have the motor transportation division, taxis, limos, wreckers, ambulances, all those non-consensual services we price regulate. And the one other thing we have is the state fire marshal's office that folks don't realize. And that impacts all of our local communities, our local fire departments. We also have pipeline safety. We regulate for safety all of those pipelines that run across our prairies out there and run through our towns and through our cities and up to our houses for safety. We also have railroad safety. So if there's a train accident somewhere, we investigate that to make sure that things were safe and people weren't harmed. So it's a vast agency, has a lot of responsibility, a lot of hats, and we employ about 176 people. We're based out of Santa Fe, and of course, my district is the southwest part of New Mexico, about 55,000 square miles down here. The best part of New Mexico, by the way.
Absolutely. And the commissioners, five commissioners, you're all elected to your positions.
That's
is that
correct.
Right?
They're district-wide elections, so it's not an election at large for New Mexico. The districts are basically the four corners of the state. So four rural commissioners and one commissioner represent predominantly Bernalillo County. Two or three commissioners touch areas in Bernalillo County as well, but for the most part, one commissioner has the Albuquerque area, and the rest of us have rural New Mexico.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about your mission to ensure fair and reasonable rates to consumers. What does that mean?
Great question, and one pretty easy to answer. Our job, and I'll explain a little bit about the roles of what the commission does and what other agencies' responsibilities are. For example, the role of the PRC commission is to balance the interest between consumers and industry. In other words, we want to make sure that there's fair, reasonable, and affordable electricity as an example. We want to make sure that the company is financially viable to make sure that it's reliable so that when you flip the switch on the light comes on, we don't have brownouts. Additionally, we want to make sure that the rates are affordable. Consumers have to have access to electricity. Business has to have access. Industry needs to have access because it's an important part of a thriving economy. So we balance those interests as well as our staff. As we look at a case, the state's attorney general is charged with protecting consumers and advocating for on the consumer side. So if we have a utility that would like a rate case, would like to raise their rates, they provide an advice notice to the commission, say we're going to raise our rates and this is when we want to raise them. And at that point, we schedule hearings and allow for intervention from the attorney general, from different various groups who may want to intervene. Those hearings are held. Evidence is presented. The companies, electric utilities, so to speak, would have the burden of proof. And all of the evidence that they have is cross-examined, just like in a courtroom. Mm-hmm. Those cases take 9 months to a year. It comes to the commission. The commission has, with a recommended decision, the commission takes one more crack at it, then decides whether or not the rates are warranted or not. That's really a quick overview of how it works. Many folks want us to be, and many times during the political season, we like to say we're consumer advocates, and that's a misconception. We're the judge. We're the ones that balance the interest and balance the evidence, and that's a difficult hurdle for a lot of folks to understand. But that is, simply put, how the commission's role.
Right. And do you follow a specific methodology in terms of trying to, you know, make these balancing judgments? I mean, how does that happen in practice?
It's a little bit of an art, a little bit of a science, and a whole lot of law and regulation. There are very few procedures in utility law and utility regulation that haven't been well thought out. There's a lot of state law involved, a lot of rulemaking, and a lot of policy that gets embedded into these decisions. So it's seldom a case where we're making a judgment call or making a policy decision during an active case. It's all based on law and rules of evidence and weighing the facts. So in some ways, it's simplified for us because we do have a clear, concise set of rules and regulations to follow.
So I'm wondering about, you know, you mentioned earlier that the PRC's role is to regulate monopolies, essentially, and your goal is really to ensure reasonable rates. I'm wondering about the role of competition in terms of trying to, you know, ensure those reasonable rates and ensure that, for instance, say, electric utilities are getting power at reasonable cost and have competition, say, in their integrated resource planning process. Does competition come into play here in terms of your methodology for making these balancing judgments?
It does somewhat. And when we look at competition, normally when you talk about competition across utilities, we think of deregulated markets. There was a number of states at one time deregulated their electric utilities. It was, interestingly enough, at a time when we saw volatile fuel markets. So sometimes that seemed really attractive when you had a completely unregulated group of suppliers. So you had transmission and folks could wheel power and wheel and deal and make. That model didn't work as well maybe as some people had hoped. But when we come back, when we drill down and look at a regulated utility and how competition can work, utilities come to the commission with, as you said, an integrated resource plan. And we look at that plan for a couple of things. One, is it an adequate supply amount? In other words, we expect a utility to be able to generate and deliver about 20% more power, 15 to 20% more power than what the projected use would be. In other words, we want a capacity factor there. So we can get to that capacity factor in a couple of ways. Utility-owned generation, which would be a generation that the stockholders of the company would own and that we would put on the market at a fair rate. The second would be non-utility-owned generation, which we'd buy, say, through a fuel and purchase power agreement from a third party. And that's where we expect the utility to introduce a competitive market. We really make sure that when they go buy power out on a six-month contract, they have to come back and prove that they got the best deal that they could get. Probably doesn't always work in every case, but we do insist that there is some competitiveness there. The same with buying and installing generation, whether it be a renewable project. We make them prove that that's the best deal at the time. Now, as fast as costs change, you know, sometimes that doesn't always work out quite as well. And we get scrutinized for that from time to time. Sometimes it works out really well. So, but there is a process in place, and I think for the most part it works fairly well.
So, you know, there's this notion that industry likes to privatize profits, keep profits for a particular company, but then socialize the costs, meaning put the costs onto the public. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, in the context of environmental issues, especially, say, with power generation, we have the companies wanting to, you know, they're paying attention to their bottom line, but at the same time, we have the public bearing the costs of that power generation. So I'm thinking here like air quality impacts, climate change, other environmental and social issues. And I'm wondering, are any of these aspects really factored into the PRC's decision making?
Yeah, and it's important to understand where the profits are derived from for a public utility. They are derived not from gross sales. When a utility gets a rate, they're entitled to 100% of their costs, what it costs them to read the meters, to send the bills, to maintain the lines. And their profit really comes from what we call return on equity or return on their investment. And that's really where those profits are derived from. And that's where there's a lot of devil in that detail. A lot of those little devils rutted are out there. But the big thing is that they have to give us the plan. They have to tell us what generation they want to use. And then we approve that. And there are a lot of considerations that come in. Reliability, depreciation over long term, whether or not it meets a renewable portfolio standard. There is a lot of factors that go into that. We don't always get it right. You know, we don't always get to add some of the policy decisions that we'd like to have or some of the environmental concerns, because for the most part, if it gets into rates or rate base, the customer base is responsible for those costs. That's maybe a complicated answer, but it's a very short answer to a complicated question.
Right. And I think that, I mean, we see this sort of generally speaking in terms of market mm-hmm. failure, in terms of pollution generation in general, and that markets can't necessarily deal with the fact that environmental degradation, emissions, water quality impacts, environmental impacts aren't really factored into that pricing structure. And so we don't necessarily have the market giving those price cues, right? So, because the markets aren't really taking into consideration those external costs. So I was just sort of wondering if any of those external costs come into consideration here. So for instance, in the case of renewables that aren't producing greenhouse gas emissions, aren't causing air quality degradation, I mean, you don't have those external costs. You don't have those environmental costs.
In some views, unquantifiable costs, mm-hmm. if you would allow that. The actual environmental cost and the remediation, of course, much of that is projected. But when we get out of those actual remediation costs, and I'll use an example, the cost of reclaiming a coal mine as you extract the coal, you know, those are pretty easily identifiable costs. We understand them. There are environmental costs such as, for instance, haze rules and carbon output. You know, I think this country is seeing a move to price carbon and have prices on that. Those become forecastable as time goes along. We've seen the EPA rule 111D has just come out. So we'll be able to quantify those kind of costs. But when we get to those further away costs, you know, when we talk about asthma and those far-reaching costs, those are very difficult to quantify and hard to put in a rate case.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back after this short break, and we'll talk more about the New Mexico Public Regulation Commission with PRC District 5 Commissioner Sandy Jones. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Director of the Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. My guest today is New Mexico Public Regulation Commission District 5 Commissioner Sandy Jones. Sandy represents the southwest corner of New Mexico and is our representative here in the KURU listening area. So let's shift gears now and talk about some of the very important electric utility issues before the PRC. PNM, Public Service Company of New Mexico, the major electric utility in the state and for us here in the Silver City area, has requested a 12% increase in electricity rates. It also has a power replacement plan for the San Juan Generating Station. Sandy, maybe you can explain all this stuff to us, because there have been, you know, all this activity. You were here in the spring for a public hearing. Many people participated in that. So explain where we are.
There's a couple of cases there that you touched on. And the one that I was here this spring on for the public comment on was the San Juan Generating Station decommissioning of two coal-fired plants. A little bit of history on that. Nearly 2 years ago, the governor of the state of New Mexico and the Environmental Protection Agency and the State Environment Department entered into an agreement with EPA to take out of service two coal-fired plants to bring New Mexico into compliance with the Hays Rule issued by the EPA. During that time, it was agreed that we'd take two plants out, probably do some $90 million of retrofit on the other two plants, to keep them going, to extend the life on the two plants. What's interesting about these cases is with EPA and these air quality rulings is it is for state environment departments and public utility commissions to suddenly have a dialogue that hasn't happened in the country in a long time unless both the commissions were appointed by state's governors. So basically what has happened here is the Environment Department has entered into agreement with the EPA to decommission two plants, and suddenly the other most popular agency in the state of New Mexico, the Public Regulation Commission, is saddled with distributing the cost or the stranded cost of doing so and how much the customers, the individual ratepayers, have to pay for that decommissioning process. So there is currently a little bit of a disconnect there because our two agencies really weren't talking at the time. Since then, I think we've made a lot of inroads and the two agencies are talking. We understand nationwide now that we're going to have these conversations and we'll be better in the future. This is a big deal for New Mexico and big deal for the United States because we're at the forefront of what's going on. So that gives you a little bit of a background information. In the San Juan case, and let me back up, you mentioned another case, which was a rate case where they were asking for a 12% increase. That filing has been rejected by the commission, so PNM will have to refile that case at another time. They appealed our decision to the Supreme Court, and we await the decision of the court. So that case is moot as we speak. Now, back to Four Corners, or back to the decommissioning of the two coal plants. That case has been litigated for about 2 years now. It was a case during the election process. It was also a case that it started out as a stipulated agreement between all the parties. Now, we can litigate a case based on facts and the commission can make a decision, or parties can get together and say, you know what, instead of doing all this litigation, we want to present to the commission a stipulated agreement and go forward and have you guys act on it. In this case, there was a stipulated agreement. There was a number of parties that had agreed to it. Some of them didn't. So the agreement was sent to hearing. We had 14 days of hearing on it. We had numerous public comment sessions around the state of New Mexico. And subsequently, things deteriorated and parties pulled out of that stipulated agreement, which further complicated things. The commission reacted and said, look, you guys got to get to work now. We're going to litigate this. So we set in motion a litigation process because the stipulation was falling apart. The hearing officer, this gets a little complicated, so listen closely, but the hearing officer in the case came with a recommended decision on this proposed stipulation, which had deteriorated from several signatories down to just two or three. He had a recommended decision on a portion of the case. With some frustration, I issued a bench order appointing a facilitator and asked parties to get back together. You guys get back together and work on this. This is too big a case. We had an agreement at one time. You guys fell apart. Now let's get back together and work. Actually, without belating the story too long, we got an agreement. The parties entered into agreement with the exception of one party. There were 17 interveners in this case, by the way. So one party has chose not to enter into the agreement. There is an agreement in place. The commission will now have to hold a hearing on that because that's a contested stipulation. And the commission will either reject or accept or modify the current agreement. Now, there's risk. If we modify one item on it, it can cause signatories to bail out and, you know, it would not be an agreement anymore. Or we can uphold it just as it is or reject it. So it's not over yet, but after 2 years of wrangling, and we really applaud the parties, these guys have really worked tirelessly.
You know, and this just happened today, is that right?
This happened today. We were, okay. You know, at 5 o'clock this evening, parties inked the deal, which is monumental. All of those parties worked tirelessly representing their side. Everybody had an invested strategy, but I really want to compliment them. Even if we don't agree, even if we don't approve this settlement, I want to compliment the parties because, you know, they had to, everybody had to give and take a little bit. And it sounds to me like, and I don't know all the details yet either, but it sounds to me like people came to a consensus for the best interest of what they thought was for New Mexico. So we'll see what happens when it gets to the commission. You know, it may be something we can live with, maybe we can't. Not sure I know, and I guarantee I don't know all the details of, right, of the settlement, but it concludes 2 years of litigation. So that's, wow, a big deal, and hundreds of thousands of dollars in costs. So hopefully it's a settlement that the commission can live with and that parties will agree to. Exciting stuff.
And so did the parties already agree to it, since you said they inked the deal today?
My understanding that there is a signatures onto a stipulated agreement.
Okay. And do you know any of the details?
You know,
I don't know
enough to really talk about. I know that there were several, what some will say, I think, were some significant environmental enhancements to it, which I think would be good. And you know, strictly from an environmental standpoint, you know, we do know that we've reduced the coal generation by 50%. There will be some solar. See, let me back up. As part of this decommissioning, when you reduce that much generation, you have to replace it with something.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of this, all this negotiation that they went through, had some agreement on what the replacement power would be. And again, you know, things are just coming in. We don't know, and I can't really opine too much on the case. You know, we have bits and pieces. I'm really hopeful that it's a good agreement, and I'm hopeful that when we see it, we'll be pleased with it. So, but time will tell. And this isn't going to happen tomorrow. This is going to take probably a few months to get a hearing scheduled, get parties notified. There's going to be responses. There's a lot of work to be done yet. You know, this is just kind of the day that we picked the car out. We haven't got to put the keys in it and drive it yet.
Right. So my understanding is, you know, part of the reason why the original stipulation fell apart was that some of the cost information came to light that some of the interveners weren't aware of. And for instance, New Energy Economy was able to go out and get access to a cost model, pay money to basically run the cost model that PNM had used to support their replacement plan. And so can you talk a little bit more about why this kind of fell apart, sort of more of the details, if you know them?
Probably can't talk about any of the why, because I'm not privy to why an intervener would not stay on a STIP or contest it. There was certainly some evidence, as I recall, in the case, and I'm going to be very careful about getting very far into it, but there were certainly a number of news accounts. That I can say is there was a number of news accounts that identified some errors. Well, one thing I will say about that is that that's not untypical, although the sheer volume of this one, as reported in the news, seemed to be
pretty significant, $1 billion,
yeah,
right?
Well, you know,
give or take
a couple of hundred million.
Right.
But the reports, the news reports were significant, and I do know what they actually were. I'm not going to talk about it. But so those reports were significant. But it's not atypical or untypical, whatever that word is. There, I didn't go to Harvard or Yale, so whatever that word is, for interveners and staff and PRC commission to find errors in filings. You have to remember, there's thousands of documents that a company files, and sometimes they make mistakes. Sometimes they make You know, I mean, that happens. I'm not excusing the company by any means. But in every case, interveners and commissioners and commission staff find errors that are not valid costs that should be along with the case. So those things do happen. But you are correct. There were issues there, and we saw signatories migrate away from the original stipulation, which maybe we have a better deal for consumers now. So we'll see.
Yeah, and it seems like just reading some of the cases that are before the PRC right now, renewables, really, the costs have come down significantly and are significantly less per kilowatt hour than, say, nuclear from the Palo Verde plant or coal. And so how is, again, we're getting back to this balancing question and the fact that renewables really are competitive and can give consumers a much better electricity rate. Maybe can you explain some of this in more detail?
And I'll tell you, it's a quickly moving target. It's rapidly moving. And I'll just give a quick example. When I was on the commission before, we had $14 gas and 22 cent solar electric contracts. Today, we have 4 cent electric solar contracts and $2 gas, natural gas. So that's how quickly it moves.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. Well, we'll pick up in the next segment. So let's take a quick break and return for the second half of our show with Sandy Jones, District 5 Commissioner with the Public Regulation Commission here on Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. Welcome back to Earth Matters. This is Allison Sibick, Director of the Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. We've been talking with my guest today, Sandy Jones, Commissioner with the Public Regulation Commission, responsible for ensuring fair and reasonable utility, telecommunications, and motor carrier rates here in New Mexico. And Sandy, let's pick up where we left off because we ran out of time in that last segment. But we're talking about renewable energy, costs of producing power from renewable sources coming down in cost and being quite competitive. So where are we? What's the situation now? How is this affecting these rate cases?
It's having a significant effect. And it's having significant effect not only for consumers in New Mexico, but for consumers out of New Mexico, because it's in my opinion that we have a thriving solar economy running in New Mexico. I think we're seeing some exciting things. A lot of people don't think we're moving quick enough. And along that point, we have a lot of discussion about why aren't we doing more today? And we always, I guess we always say, well, you know, we got to ease into it gradually. We got to, you know, not move too quick. And I really never had, I think, what the real answer is when we talk about moving too quick. And I mentioned it in the earlier segment. When I was on the commission before, we had $14 gas and 22 cent solar. And those 22 cent solar contracts were for 20 years. Guess what? We're seeing them down as low as 4 cents. And that's in the period of about 6, 7, 8 years. So there is some value in moving slow too, because had we loaded up 8 years ago with 22 cent solar, we wouldn't be reaping the benefits that we are now. And I guess that just kind of popped into my head in the last few minutes as I try to justify why we need to move cautiously but diligently into that. So we're seeing significant reductions in cost in solar and wind. You know, the one that we haven't talked about is geotherm. The technology in geotherm is not new, but it's catching on, and it's very, very efficient. So we're going to see a lot of that. And that's 100% renewable and no emission. So I guess I'm kind of excited to see how it's going as we start relieving coal and fossil fuels out of our energy mix and how we keep that keep that affordable.
And it seems EPA issued its final carbon rule last week, and New Mexico is going to have to cut carbon emissions from power plants by 28% by 2030. And as everybody knows, these carbon emissions contribute to climate change. And, you know, I'm interested in your thoughts on the carbon rule. It seems like, at least in New Mexico, PNM, the Environment Department, we're all happy with the rule. So is this really like the regulatory driver that's going to sort of shift us to more renewables in when we look at our power portfolio, our energy portfolio?
One thing we know for sure is that the rule is modified position New Mexico in a much, the targets were much more beneficial to New Mexico than the original, with the original estimates. Part of that is beneficial to New Mexico because we, I think the Environment Department and the generators were gearing up for more. So just by reducing San Juan in that particular case has positioned New Mexico pretty well. That means there's some work to do, but it also makes it, I think, simpler to move renewable in as an option. In other words, we don't have to shut down. We can use a better mix of, say, a combined cycle gas plant that we may not have been able to use before because there is emissions there also. So I think that New Mexico is poised well now. But I will also tell you this. Because of New Mexico's unique location with solar and a decent location for wind, we're just going to continue to see those costs fall. The technology's there. We have workforces here. We're developing the products here. We're assembling the products. We have companies that have 80% market share worldwide being built right here in New Mexico, and that just makes it better for us. What it also does, as we see 111D coming in,
is that the carbon rule, 111D?
That was the, carbon rule. What we're going to see here is that what we want to make sure that New Mexico positions itself as an exporter of renewable energy. We want to be able to make sure that we have transmission going out, not just for our New Mexico ratepayers, but we'd like to exceed our abilities for renewable energy because that will also give us some certificates and help along the way. So, you know, we got to lead not only as local consumers but as an export. I think it's a great export product that we have.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, of course I care about us as ratepayers here mm-hmm. in New Mexico rather than, you know, exporting our power out of state. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what is it going to take to get more renewables in our electricity mix through PNM and what is it, Southwest Public Service?
SPS and El Paso Electric.
Right. So it seems like they're much more aggressive in terms of incorporating renewables into their portfolio. You know, what is it going to take with PNM to really boost renewables here in New Mexico?
Two things. One, number one, I think I feel pretty confident that under the current legislation with the 20% by 2020, the 15 by 15, our utilities are on track and tracking with that legislation. There is also a reasonable cost threshold cap on what these renewables can cost. Because there was a time when, you know, a 20% goal would have cost the consumer a lot of money. So those caps were put in place, 3% cap now. But what's exciting is I think we're going to make our targets, our legislative requirements, we're going to make that underneath the 3% cap. But beyond that, as we see the market drive those prices down, the cost of solar down, I think we're going to exceed those caps we're going to exceed our goals, our 20% goal by 2020. We'll exceed it without affecting rates. In other words, we may actually be able to reduce that 3% cap because they are hitting the 3%. They're very close, but we may be able to eliminate that 3% cap just out of market factors. that is the day that it gets really exciting, mm-hmm. because then we may be able to see an overall drop down the line. Now, keep in mind, we still got to figure out a way, and I know that there will be people say that we have the technologies already here. Implementing the technology is a little tougher than just waving the magic wand, but we still have to remember there's a baseload requirement and how we integrate all of the renewables and the baseload together to make sure that the lights are running at midnight when the wind isn't blowing and all of those things that we hear the naysayers say. We have to make sure that we have the baseload capacity there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways to do that, and we talk about it a lot. Do we do it with purchase power agreements where we buy electricity from another state? I'm no fan of that. I want the investment in New Mexico because these are significant investments, $100, $200, $300 million investments. So I don't want to give Texas that tax money. I don't want to give Arizona that tax money. I want it here. So we want that investment here in New Mexico as well. But there's a lot of ways to integrate that mix, and that's the balancing act that we have, and it's not an easy one sometimes.
Right, and just in the few minutes we have left in this segment, what's happening with rooftop solar and that case?
See, I think that's the next exciting step. I think we're on the verge of getting it all over the country in New Mexico for those who couldn't normally afford it. That's coming. It'll be here soon.
Okay. And now, wasn't there some sort of a case in terms of charging people for rooftop solar? Is that right? I don't know if that case was put on hold
we've seen a couple of rate cases where the IOUs are asking for a standby charge or a demand charge or an additional charge for those with interconnected solar facilities on their roof. Basically, they're saying, you know, those people will net meter out and really not have a bill. But the utilities are saying, on one hand, the utilities saying, well, we got these generating facilities standing by at ready. We have an electric line going to your house and ready to serve you if your system doesn't work. So there's a charge there. But on the other side, when they sell back at the right time, there's a benefit to the system. So we got to balance that. See, you know, there's a balance there. I don't know that it's an equal balance. It mm-hmm. may or may not be, but that's one that that's uncharted territory that has to be litigated and proven out, see what that prudent charge would or would not be.
Okay. We'll take a short break and talk more with Sandy Jones of the Public Regulation Commission here on Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. We've been talking with Public Regulation Commission District 5 Commissioner Sandy Jones. The PRC is responsible for ensuring fair and reasonable rates for utility, telecommunications, and motor carrier customers. And Sandy, public access to documents in the San Juan replacement plan case have been the subject of a lot of controversy and most recently a lawsuit in which the PRC sued the Santa Fe New Mexican over documents that were marked confidential relating to the San Juan case. Maybe you can bring us up to speed because I think a lot happened on that case this week. Give us a bit of background and tell us what happened.
Somebody said they could see right through my transparency here today. That is an interesting little piece, and I really appreciate the question. So, a little bit of background. During the San Juan case, there's a number of confidential documents and have protective orders issued with them. And those documents, it's not uncommon to have a lot of confidential information. Now, that confidential information is available to everyone that intervenes in the case. So if you're an active participant in the case, you sign a letter of confidentiality agreement, you're entitled to see those documents. You're not entitled to give them to anyone. In this particular case, there was some IPRA requests put out by the Santa Fe New Mexican, and those IPRA requests were more along the lines of communications between commissioners and PNM and maybe commissioners and a stock analyst. There was a bit of controversy going on, and they wanted all of those documents. In the process of putting them together, The normal process at the PRC is you cast a wide net. You capture anything that would be on all of our computers. My computer was netted. So you cast this wide net, and you assemble all the clerk assembles all that information, produces it on a document, then legal or general counsel go through that, and they pick out the items that were requested in the IPRA. In this particular case, it appears that wide net was cast. However, nobody reviewed the documents to see what was on there, and so they contained some confidential information on there. And we'll talk a little bit about why that stuff should or shouldn't be confidential. At any rate, the disk was there. The chief of staff, there was an inquiry made about the chief of staff. Well, if that information's ready, give it to them and let them take it. Somehow or another, and I don't know when this happened, but somehow or another, they found out that the documents were confidential. Now, keep in mind, one of the things that we do to make it simple is we require all of our confidential documents to be issued on pink sheets, not electronic. That's usually the order of the day, is to make them hard copy on pink sheets so there's no question that they're confidential. In this case, that broke down. Somehow or another, they found out that those documents were there. Our general counsel reacted, met with them, then demanded that they be returned. That didn't happen. New Mexican dug in. They had the documents, and it's very clear under our law that if the documents are not obtained illegally under the freedom of speech, Santa Fe, New Mexico is clearly entitled to have them and do with what they pleased. We entered into that lawsuit. We dropped the lawsuit. Commission reviewed it and said, look, this isn't our case. We made a mistake. They went out, and you know, we would hope that the Santa Fe, New Mexico wouldn't produce them, but they did, and they're entitled to, and the rest is, as they say, history. So we pulled out of that case. The question is, why should they be confidential, and why shouldn't the public just be able to have everybody's information? Well, there's significant reasons, and let's talk about, in this particular case, they involve coal contracts, stock analyzation, possible sales of companies in the tens of millions of dollars. And so if those are submitted to us for review to see if those are prudent costs for the utility to endure, well, let's say that though we decided, you know, that isn't a good cost, and so therefore you don't get to use that. When you go to the next step to find someone else to replace that, that gives us a distinct unfair advantage to someone else if those documents were just out on the open market. It's not an auction sale. These are very sensitive documents that pertain to companies, stockholders, and their ability to release performance under SEC requirements and those kind of things. So there is some reason. I know that it doesn't maybe look so good on paper, but there are some reasons for those documents to be held confidential. And it's a regular course of business. The interveners, the people who are actually involved in the case, all had access to those anyway. And so the people who are actively litigating the case had that access. So whether you agree or disagree, that's the process that we have. And I really think at the end of the day, the PRC made the right decision. There was no reason to continue that lawsuit and cost the private industry money to defend something that they shouldn't have had to defend. It was an unfortunate situation. You know, I wish things hadn't have worked out that way. I wish we hadn't have litigated them, but they did. And I think in the end, nobody was harmed in the end. So that's kind of my take on that.
Okay. So, you know, the other criticism that came up in the San Juan case was conflicts of interest and the fact that some staff still have ties to PNM and retirement packages from perhaps when they were mm-hmm. employees or stocks, et cetera. And so I think there's concern that, you know, whether or not the PRC commissioners are receiving unbiased analysis on the important cases that are coming before you. And I'm just wondering, do you have a response to that criticism?
And those are great questions. But here's the deal. For us to hire experts in the industry, we don't pay anywhere near what industry pays. That's just a fact. We cannot compete with private industry. in government. So we have to seek out people who are experienced in the industry. And a lot of times that means reaching out to people who have worked within the industry who are ready to change, you know, maybe make a life change, maybe make a, you know, a move to Santa Fe or those kind of things. So our options are look at regulatory people who are government workers working at other agencies. We recruit them over at ours. Or we can look to industry where that expertise really is. It's the people who understand how power plants work, how transmission works. So we have to recruit those kind of people. Or we can go to colleges and recruit someone with no practical experience and try to train them. So it is a very fine line, a very difficult line to get someone who has knowledge and obviously would have some tie to industry, but has the institutional knowledge that they can come advise us in a good way. Because you just don't, it's very difficult to educate someone in those kind of situations. You need the practical experience.
Sure.
So it's obviously a concern. We try to inoculate that as best we can by, say, if we had a former PNM employee, if we can, we put them on an EPE case. Or, you know, we try to inoculate the best we can. But the real safety valve is just the whole process at the PRC through a case. Because they're heavily litigated. We have expert hearing officers, the best in the nation, literally the best in the nation. So it has a heavily litigated process with expert hearing officers. And then it has the next step that goes up to commission and staff and then to commission approval. So there is a lot of steps to get through and a lot of safety valves along the way. So
But in terms of conflicts of interest, if you're providing analysis for a case, say, for instance, for PNM, and you have stock in that
Correct.
Company,
That's an
and
issue.
That decision could impact the stock value of that company, that's a conflict
Exactly.
of interest. And are employees required to disclose those conflicts of interest?
They are. And you know, we had, and that was a case there, and I don't know, I guess I'm a little fuzzy on all the details on it, but here's the deal. If you do have, you have to disclose your interest. That's a requirement, as well as we do. So we need to inoculate that conflict if we can and identify it. In some of these cases, if you worked for a utility and had a retirement, would a retirement necessarily mean that you would be biased? Not necessarily. The problem is many of these utilities, as part of their retirement package, have stock options behind them and is, you know, laying out behind the retirement package. That's when it becomes problematic and a conflict. And in this one particular case, the employee sold the stock. But you're dead on. I mean, those things do create conflicts and make it difficult. And it's just a challenge we have that we just really need to work through.
Well, Sandy, let's look forward here and talk about where a lot of interest around community solar and where things are going in the future around renewables. And so, you know, what do you see when you look in your crystal ball in terms of renewables and community solar, where or things like community solar? Where, you know, where do you see things going?
What? You know, I just think it's the exciting part about being a regulator is we're seeing all of this change come about, and it's really neat. Right now, I'll probably screw this up here, but bear with me. Right now, community solar programs are catching on, and people have a lot of interest in, and it provides a little bit of a certainty for someone's electric bill going out forward. I heard a great statement today about energy security. In New Mexico, if it's an investor utility-owned community server, well, then that can be done. But a third-party community, like a solar garden, where they wheel electricity, I don't think is legal in New Mexico as of right now. But I think you're going to see those kind of things. Those kind of cooperatives for people who want to have that kind of certainty, maybe out 20 years for their electric bill. It's coming. It may not all be here yet, but, you know, consumers will eventually get what they want.
And will you as a PRC commissioner support those types of innovative new types of programs?
You know, I want to make sure when if it comes to third-party electric wheeling, I have some concerns about that because there are, you know, there are balancing requirements for the utilities to have. There are models out there that will work. But I also believe that there's models, you know, we need to have the utility have some controls over it. So, you know, we're going to support models like that in the future.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and speaking with us today here in the GMCR studio. I appreciate you talking with us on Earth Matters.
It's been a great pleasure, and I would just love to come back anytime. And thanks for the great questions, and we look forward to more dialogue.
Thanks, Sandy. I appreciate it. So that's all the time we have today. Thank you to our audio engineer, Kyle Johnson. We hope you'll join us again for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio 89.1 FM.